This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Hello and welcome to Uprise Radio with your hosts Koshin and Zan.
I had planned to play a demo version of Born in the USA by Bruce Springsteen, but we're having some technological difficulties, so maybe I'll just sing it for you a cappella. Yeah,
hopefully we can get that for the outro, but we can sing it. That would be good. A little karaoke edition of Uprise Radio.
And wanted to play that track at the beginning, because it's an incredible original version of what is a bit of a blockbuster hit, and the original version is a very different, spooky, haunted tone. And secondly, because it relates to what we're talking about today, which is
Rambo. We're talking about the Sylvester Stallone starring film First Blood about John Rambo from
1982.
Close. Very close.
I've been meaning to watch this film for as long as I've known Koshin, which is a very long time, and we finally watched it the other day, and we have many thoughts.
Got a lot to say. It's a beautiful piece of Cold War propaganda. It's an archived version of the peak of international propaganda. Before, we were talking before about how international propaganda is now devolved to AI-generated memes and TikTok-length films, but back in the day, they used to make a whole blockbuster film, and they were great. They were subtle. There was a message, but you had to think about it.
And they were huge franchises. I really was holding out this entire film for us to go to Afghanistan, and it never happened. But apparently that's in the third film, so I'm going to have to keep watching.
You have to wait. You have to wait to get there. So we could not play any music, but we did get a soundboard made up. So this may be the first AM radio station to ever play this sound. Okay. You're welcome, folks. You're welcome. It's all I have to say.
This is cutting-edge technology, everyone.
Cutting-edge technology. Incredible stuff. Incredible stuff. That's just what you get. That's community radio. That's a big thank you for all the sponsors from Radiothon. I came in early, and one of the things on my mind was make sure you get a sheet of paper with everyone who donated, and I did not get that sheet. I forgot to print that off. But thank you to everyone who donated. We will have your names for the next episode.
Memorialized on a plaque.
Definitely, definitely. And a quick plug at the start, don't forget Uprise Trivia July 22nd at Hard Out Bar. So stay tuned. Well, don't stay tuned. Buy the ticket is what I have to say.
And you can see us finally in the flesh to make sure that we're actually real.
Yep. It's a digital world and you can't trust anything. But when you see us in person, you'll say, I get it. Those two. Yeah, it's definitely for real.
Need help. All right. So we're on a very strict time schedule for today. So number one, quick background to the film for anyone that hasn't seen it. It was directed by Wake in Fright director Ted Kotcheff in 1982, and it's based on the novel by David Morrell, who has written over 28 novels, some of which, worth noting, is also Captain America.
Yeah, through and through career propagandist and very, very suspiciously spy-like background.
Yeah, so in my searches about David Morrell, it says that he is a graduate of the National Outdoor Leadership School for Wilderness Survival. He is a member of the G. Jordan Liddy Academy of Corporate Security, an honorary lifetime member of the Special Operations Association, and the Association of Former Intelligence Officers, which really is giving spy vibes. He's also been trained to handle firearms, crisis negotiation, and has earned his FAA license to pilot but which he says is all part of research for his novel.
It's a lot of research, and I just, you don't get to be a part of the former spy club without being a spy in the first place.
Yeah.
That's my thinking on this.
It would be incredible if all of these books were actually just a decoy for David Morrell to be a spy.
Yeah, I mean, it's suspicious. It's suspicious. But First Blood, the film, is a bit of a cult classic, I guess. Although not really an occult classic, it's just it was a massive film when it came out. It's still very culturally relevant. But it is so obviously deeply propagandistic as well. It's obviously framed around the Vietnam War and a returned Vietnam veteran. And there is a lot of political messaging throughout the film, even though the sequels really both expand the propaganda, they make the propaganda a lot more obvious, but also drill down into just the shooting part of the film. The first one is a little more subtle. There's not much shooting. You know, there's action, but there's not a lot of it's not just a gun fest the whole time.
I saw a really incredible review by a NAM journalist, Will Cox, that says, talking about Sylvester Stallone, it says, "The character is peak 80s Stallone, a byword for pure testosterone, an absurd, improbably muscular slab of ham with a headband and an M60 machine gun, spraying bullets at racial characters in a jungle or a desert somewhere."
Yeah. The first one is mostly white. Maybe entirely white, now that I think about it. I can't think of a single non-white character. There's one woman at the start of the film
who is not credited.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Actually, she's not white. There's one non-white, non-male character at the start of the film, and then
diversity, inclusion, all boxes ticked.
Then they move on and they say, what if this film was entirely white guys? it's a special film.
It's a men's world for sure.
Yeah.
Another interesting fact was Sylvester Stallone, apparently when he first came across the script, said that it was so bad that he wanted to burn it to make sure no one ever read it again, which I think is a real testament to having written something very powerful.
Yeah, that's a good review. You want your reactionary critics to come out and say this should be burned. that's the appropriate response you should be trying to get.
I hope someone says that about our show one day.
Yeah. So I guess maybe let's go through the story. Let's recap Rambo. That was a bad time. We gotta time this better.
No, every time I say that should happen. Just to keep me on my toes.
Yeah, let's... okay, so it starts out with Rambo going to his old Vietnam buddy's house. He walks up. He seems to be just walking around, which is a big part of the character, as he's very directionless. He walks to his friend's house. He wrote down the address when they were in Vietnam together. He gets to the house and talks to a lady who turns out to be his friend's mum, asking where he is. And he is told that he has died of cancer from Agent Orange, and that he brought back Vietnam with him, and he died from his actions. Spraying Agent Orange, which was a chemical weapon used by the U.S. to defoliate or destroy the forest in Vietnam, because that's where the guerrilla fighters were. And it did have a big effect on the soldiers. I mean, that is real. That's historically accurate. A lot of soldiers did die from being in contact with it. That's a Monsanto chemical. Monsanto is still around. Big glyphosate producer now. Now that it's called Bayer, but same company. So, yeah, points for historical accuracy, mostly. It lines up.
And then everything really starts to derail when Rambo, after getting such hard-hitting news, really just wants to go and get a feed, really wants a sandwich. And is it, I think, Teasel, the officer, comes in and really refuses Rambo doing this, and it turns into a whole scene where things start escalating. Rambo insists that he never drew first fire or first blood. And it seems that they're really coming up on bad vibes with each other and not having any real evidence to do so, but things continuously escalate and more people get involved.
Yeah, this is one of the best parts. I mean, the movie is anti-cop in a way that is very cool. Like, it does show that the police, one of their primary purposes in society is not just enforcing laws, but enforcing social norms. And Rambo is, you know, he hasn't shaved. He's dirty because he's a vagrant. He's walking around, but he hasn't committed any crimes. He hasn't done anything wrong, but he's still punished by Teasel, the head cop of this town, because that's what, you know, again, pretty good for accuracy. Like, that is a primary function of the police, is to enforce social norms and social rules that aren't written down anywhere. But you're still penalized, and he's detained illegally by the police for this.
I wish there could be a sequel as to what would have happened to the United States in general if this officer had let Rambo just have a feed and go on.
Things
would have turned out so differently.
Rambo keeps saying that he says stop pushing me, which
never push a hangry man.
Never. Yeah. Yeah. Guys, hungry, you don't want to push that. I've just never heard anyone else say, stop pushing me like that. Is that a phrase that's used anywhere else? Is that something that went out of date, maybe?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah. He's detained and then has a full-blown PTSD flashback in the cells underneath the police station. Remembering his time in Vietnam and the time that he spent in a POW camp being tortured. And he relates the experience of being tortured to the experience that he's having, where he's, you know, being beaten up in a police cell and forced to be shaved. And freaks out, starts punching people, makes a very quick escape from the police station, very well timed. Every time someone opens up a door to investigate, Rambo pushes through the door. It's a lot of good coincidences for him for getting out, but he does get out and he hits a motorbike and heads for the mountain.
One of the most incredible, like, four-wheel drive bike track motorbike car chase scenes. I don't think I've ever seen a motorbike go up such a sledge of mud before in my life.
The action in the movie is incredible. Like, the chase scene's really good. Very
their
exciting.
Outfits?
Yeah.
Incredibly sexy.
Yeah. Yeah, Rambo is, he's not, what's he wearing?
He's just wearing
pants,
he's got a
right?
top that he's tied around himself, but he's cinched it at the waist in this like really hot way, and he's just constantly glistening the whole film.
Yeah. It's, this is back when we were talking about, this is a film firmly from the era of movies being wet and moist. Everyone's sweaty. Everyone has a layer of liquid on them at all times. They're not this modern dry Hollywood film where everyone's it's
parched.
It's a wet film from the wet era of the 80s. What happens next? I guess
lots of fighting.
They chase Rambo into the mountains, and Teasel is hell-bent on getting him, and they try very hard to get him. They get some sniffer dogs in. Then one of the cops goes rogue, tries to shoot Rambo from a helicopter and falls out and dies, and then they blame Rambo for killing him, which is actually, as far as I know, the only death in the film. For a film with a reputation as a big shoot 'em up, I think that's the only person who dies in the whole movie.
Yeah, it's a testament to how a film can be so incredibly violent without there needing to be an actual on-paper death.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, it's very violent. I mean, a lot of people get hurt. But, and then from that, Rambo gets that guy's gun. I have a sound effect for that.
Start!
Oh, okay. Didn't put that properly. Okay, well, we'll edit that in. We'll edit that up for next episode. We'll get a clean gun sound. Rambo gets a gun, and from then on, it's a chase through the woods. Rambo uses the training that he picked up in Vietnam from all the Vietnamese communists. He uses their tactics against the police. He strings up, it's a lot of spike traps and things that look very, look like they would hurt a lot. Takes out all the police, but doesn't kill them, and tries to go into hiding.
Mm.
Yeah.
And the, what's the name of the person that trained him?
Colonel, well, let's find out.
Another incredible soundbite.
Got a soundbite for that?
Never possessed God in heaven to make a man like Rambo.
God didn't make Rambo. I made him.
Who the hell are you?
And I took out the bit at the end that says his name, so I...
we'll call him Colonel someone.
It's Colonel Troutman. Colonel Troutman. I remember because his name is Troutman like a fish man, which I don't know if that's... I'm not sure what you meant to make of that. maybe that's just a real last name that I'm not familiar with, but to me it reads like fish man.
Fishman's relationship with Rambo is really interesting because Rambo is both like his prodigy and his failure and now kind of his responsibility.
Mm.
And he's the only guy that can kind of get through to Rambo. But it seems like that it's both kind of a failure and a success depending on which way you look at it.
Definitely. Yeah. Really very well put. Really. Yeah.
Thanks, Goshen.
Yeah. He creates this guy. He says at the start, he made Rambo. He created him for the purpose of fighting in Vietnam and killing in the war. But now that he's back in the United States, he no longer has a purpose. And now that he's trying to relive that purpose of violence, it's inappropriate because he's back in the homeland and he's not supposed to be fighting anymore. So the colonel has to come in and try to defuse the situation and says that he is trying to rescue, he's not trying to rescue Rambo, he's trying to rescue the police from Rambo because Rambo is the expert.
Mm. It made me think a lot about just the perception of war veterans and how they're treated and the way that they're navigated in society, and seeing this guy kind of almost being this like Frankenstein creation that now only one person in the world can really get through to him is, it's real sad.
Yeah. This is obviously like a very reactionary film. It's obviously, politically deeply reactionary and right wing, but also does kind of do a really good job of showing a lot of the real processes that these soldiers are trained and created into killing machines, but they're chewed up and spat out by the institution of the military. And when Rambo returns, there's nothing for him to do. He is not given, employment. He's not helped out in any way. He's just left alone. He's just abandoned by this institution that fundamentally changed him as a human being, turned him into something else, and then just was done with him, didn't need him anymore, and just left him alone.
Yeah, there's like a multiplicity of like being abandoned by the institution, but at the same time, if something goes wrong down the line, and here I'm thinking of like what was happening in the media with Ben Robert Smith and being held accountable for alleged war crimes, how you're abandoned up until the point in which you can then be held personally responsible for something, and then the institution will definitely, not take responsibility and come running after you again.
In the same way in this film, the institution of the military that created... Rambo is personally held responsible for his actions. And Colonel Troutman, I think, is a stand-in for the military as an institution. But Troutman he doesn't share in that responsibility. He's not presented as being... equally responsible. He's seen as being able to be helpful in the diffusing of the situation, but he is in no way kind of complicit in the crimes that Rambo is committing back in the US.
Even though Rambo's just following his orders.
And definitely no guilt on any of the crimes that they committed in Vietnam, which are never presented as anything other than the right thing to do and good. There's no reflection on the fact that Vietnam was a wholly illegal invasion of a country, that the U.S. committed mass atrocities, they kind of level some criticisms. They talk about criticisms that they got. Rambo says that he was called a baby killer by a protester. The U.S. military did kill a lot of people in Vietnam. If you were part of some elite special forces whose whole job it was to go into villages and kill everyone, I would imagine that that's not some baseless criticism. It sounds like exactly what Rambo's job was in Vietnam, was to kill.
And it's interesting because I think there's a lot of talk about the first Rambo being an anti-war film, but it feels to me that it's not really anti-war, it's anti the poor treatment of American soldiers.
Yeah.
Because if it was anti-war, I feel like there would be a lot more respect and platforming given to both sides, not
Definitely.
Just the American soldier.
Definitely. Yeah. I don't find it to be an anti-war film at all. I mean, a big part
Everyone's
of it
is... Everyone's so wet and glistening and beautiful. Yeah. How could that possibly be anti-war?
If anything, I mean, the whole thing propagates this, like, stabbed in the back narrative that... You know, that the soldiers who were fighting in Vietnam, the brave soldiers who were going over there to fight, could have won, but they weren't allowed to win, Rambo says. That he wasn't allowed to win, kind of blaming anti-war protesters or liberals for being too soft and not
letting the military... Like a left-wing critique?
It's just like, it's the same thing they do now where they say, you know, the military is not going to be woke anymore. It's going to be completely unrestrained, as if that's the... thing that's holding them back from military victory is being critiqued from the left. Which also, on a bit of a side note, is definitely happening now on the right. I've noticed this whole right-wing anti-Zionism thing, these Tucker Carlson figures saying that Israel's actually bad. I can just see that they're putting the framework together for the same exact kind of like, we would have won in the Middle East, or we wouldn't have even been fighting the Middle East if it wasn't for Israel, that, you know, the U.S. is a beautiful country that's only going to war all the time because of this nefarious kind of influence, and that they're trying to kind of, do the same thing where they're cleaning up the image by blaming this perceived kind of, betrayal.
Wonder if this relates to trans people being banned from the military.
I mean,
got to change the image.
I think part of it, they always want someone that they can blame for them being held back or not.
If only
being...
they knew how powerful trans people were.
Yeah, they're really talking up trans people. I think didn't Pauline Hanson call them insurgents recently?
Oh, as a trans person, it makes me feel proud.
Yeah, you always want to live up to the expectations of your
Pauline Hanson.
Political enemies. Like when people, like, you listen to the right-wing press about Labour, this communist party that's, you know, going to socialize all of our industries and give everyone a house, and you think, well, I wish. That sounds great.
Talking of press clubs... The response to Rambo in 1986 was also really interesting. There was a press conference held by Soviet cultural officials and artists in Moscow to publicly denounce Rambo, and it was criticized a lot as being a kind of deliberate American propaganda. But then the response was for the Soviet Union to produce its own version, which has been called the Detached Mission. Also, it's just been called the Soviet Rambo. And I think it's really interesting to see how different nations at war will make blockbuster films as part of their long-term tactics.
Yeah. China's been doing it a little bit. China's got some really good kind of... The new Cold War is in full swing because China is making movies about, you know... kind of hypothetical conflicts. There's one called the Battle of Lake Changjin that was a huge hit in China that I have never been able to see. They didn't release it in Australia. From what I understand, and the Wolf Warrior series, they've got a lot of films about like the evil US mercenaries fighting against, you know, the it's the same. It's, I would not be surprised if a lot of them were just one-to-one the Rambo plot, but from a Chinese perspective. Cold War propaganda makes good cinema.
I would love to see a Rambo remake from a female perspective.
Was there? No, I'm wrong. I don't think there has been. Could be the next one. Yeah.
As part of the ongoing franchise. And I haven't seen any of the other Rambos, but I do hear from the internet that they get a lot more explicitly pro-American propaganda.
Yeah. I mean, the first movie, the whole point is, isn't it so sad that this person has had to kill and that it's changed him and that it's, you know, he's lost his own humanity in the killing of other humans. And then Rambo 2, they say, let's go back to Vietnam. And, you know, then he's rescuing secret prisoners of war that after the war has ended. It's a lot of propaganda. It's very, it's much more overt in its propaganda.
They even made a kids animation series as part of the franchise, which is incredibly terrifying. It's called Rambo, The Force of Freedom.
Freedom Force. That's what you want.
For kids.
Yeah. Yep. It's always those woke lefties indoctrinating kids and not the Department of Defense funded animated series called Freedom Force. That is not propaganda. That is, you know, Bluey is propaganda. Teaching kids to share their lunch. That's propaganda.
How did we go with our strict timeline?
We did pretty well. I think we hit, we tried to be organized for this episode, folks. And I think it went pretty well. I think we hit everything on the list, except for the hate corner.
Oh,
we have the hate corner to go. And that is, us being haters for 1 minute quickly, mainly just me. I just really wanted to hate on someone real quick.
Go.
Listeners in Brunswick, if you are in Brunswick and you can hear me, resist the pull of this new Labour candidate that they have made in a lab to appeal to progressive people in Brunswick. It is the most Greens-coded Labour person. He didn't even go through a pre-selection. The Labour deep state personally picked him and put him forward in Brunswick because he's, you know, trendy and he's got pierced ears and he's going to say the right stuff. This person cannot. This show is going to swap to be a just pure anti this guy. I'm not even going to say his name on the show, but we are going to be anti Labour in Brunswick. That's going to be every episode from now on. So tune in for that.
My one bit of hate is that a pharmacist asked me today what my good Christian name was because I gave them not my government name. And I have never heard anyone say, what is your good Christian name? And you know what I hate most is that I didn't say any, I just gave it up.
Yeah.
I didn't even mention that I'm not Christian.
That's incredible. I've not heard a phrase like that in a long time. That's really something special. I don't know.
The world's a beautiful place.
I'm kind of speechless. That's wild.
And then I was charged $210 for my medication, if that wasn't bad enough.
That's egregious. You can't insult someone and then charge them the full price. All right, well, we probably can't go out on any music because we did not solve this issue with the music cable. I don't know why I didn't want to say orcs. Like, that's giving up the
yes,
game.
Yes, everyone, we're playing orcs.
Yeah, just so everyone knows, we use orcs cables in here. We will leave you with a community service announcement. And then we are followed by the boldness, I think, is this week. I did not check the roster. I'm hoping it is. why don't we just quickly check out the last soundboard we got going on here.
You think you just fell out of a coconut tree?
Beautiful. Beautiful. Get ready to hear that one a lot. All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We will see you all in a couple of weeks.